Hello and welcome to a very short, probably, episode of the Scottcast. Joining me this week is Noobarama.
I don't know, because Mario is coming out for the Nintendo Switch in 2 weeks.
Mario Kart came out today, so it might be, I think?
No, sorry, Minecraft, not Mario. Okay. I get my bullshit mixed up sometimes.
So with hot news like that, it's April the 28th.
Oh, no, wait. I'm looking at this list right now. Prey is coming out next week. I'll get that.
Wait, is that next week or the week after?
Yeah, that's next week, May 5th.
Prey looks really good.
Next week. Next Friday.
Fucking awesome looking. Like, it reminds me somewhere of a Bioshock meets a Deus Ex.
System Shock.
And Dishonored. Yeah. Yeah. It just looks great. I don't know how it's going to hang against like the other big games that came out this year. Like, for you, probably, I'm betting Prey is going to be your game of the year. That's what I'm betting.
No.
Well, what else is coming out this year? No. Freaking...
Shadow Mordor looks really good. That's coming out.
Okay.
The South Park game, which we haven't seen fuck all since last year.
That doesn't exist.
It's coming out.
It's vaporware.
It might have actually straight up disappeared because I have not seen anything. Star Wars Battlefront 2, Call of Duty World War 2. I mean, it's some hot shit.
Is that
jumping
into news?
That's a hot
turd
on my mouth.
Is that us jumping straight back into news?
That's jumping us right into the biggest announcement of the year. Dun, 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 dun. Actually, that's Battlefield. It's Battlefield.
No,
I don't know what
Battlefield
is.
Bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, it's like, duh, duh. Oh, right, now it's the Seven Nation Army.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah. Like, you're thinking of old Battlefield before they went dubstep with that shit.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. That's more what it sounds like.
Before they realized that the only way to like be respectful to the World Wars is to play Glitch Mob dubstep.
It's like every Remembrance Day, you have a poppy, and at the ceremony, you have somebody
a
on a tuba going. That's really what they fought for, I think, for EDM.
To be fair, it kind of is.
Yes, it is.
It is. They fought for us to be as stupid as we ever wanted to be.
They fought and they died, and then the EDM came. Yeah.
And saved us all from ourselves.
Yeah, saved us all.
Oh, man. So, Noob, as the resident World War expert, what is your opinion of the fantastic Call of Duty World War II trailer, i.e. essentially a copy-paste from every World War II movie ever made?
Yeah, I don't understand. Saving Private Ryan came out like 20 years ago,
exactly.
But that's still like the continual World War II theme that doesn't stop.
It is the touchstone. It is the thing that must be done in every World War II thing ever.
And it's like going to be like a 12-man squad and you're supposed to care about these characters. No one's going to care. It's Call of Duty.
It's
Call of Duty.
I can't believe it. 1998 is when Saving Private Ryan came out. 1998.
Yeah, 98.
Holy shit, Tom Hanks looks young. He like looks like a
Tom Hanks. He doesn't have gray hair.
Holy shit, he hasn't got like massive wrinkles all over him. Oh my god. Nope. Oh dude, this is back when Matt Damon was thin.
Yes.
Instead of just like huge.
The World Trade Center was still there.
If you take screenshots from Saving Private Ryan and put them right next to screenshots of Call of Duty World War II, I aside from one being clearly
you
real,
probably couldn't. Yeah,
couldn't tell the difference. The same fucking thing.
You know what? I'm happy with things going back to the World War I, World War II setting because I'm
really?
Kind of sick of modern warfare now. I'm kind of sick of it. I'm sick of it, but
well, are you sick
at
of
the
modern
same
warfare?
Time,
because I was actually just kind of getting into future warfare. I was liking how that was going, like everything kind of going.
Crazy. I skipped future warfare. That's the thing. I only played Titanfall. I never played
Titanfall.
Any
was
other
good
Call
though.
Of Duties.
Like I'm down
for
future shit.
Yeah, it was, but I didn't really care about the world as much as I just cared about the game and playing Call of Duty though.
Yeah, that's fair.
But this game looks like a piece of shit. So that's what I think.
And I bet it'll sell huge. And
yeah, it'll sell gangbusters because it's Call of Duty and World War II. And then there'll be kids playing this game who's like, oh, this is the first World War II Call of Duty game. Because they never played.
I was gonna say, like, World War II, is that Call of Duty 3? Was that World War II? World War II was World War II as well.
World War at War. So, like, people who just started playing Call of Duty in, like, 2011, I guess, 2010, this will be their first World War II shooter.
So World at War, so Call of Duty 3 was, like, 2003. World at War was, like, 2008.
Yeah.
So after that, it's been 9 years since the last World War II Call of Duty game.
Exactly. So what other World War II game has there been, shooter-wise? I can't think of anything.
Isn't that all Sniper Elite games?
I guess, but that's not... I guess, sure.
I don't think they're really... They're not in the same, like, league.
I didn't know people played Sniper Elite, to be honest.
Wait, was Battlefield? Was Battlefield...
No, like... Battlefield was Battlefield 3, 2009, Battlefield 4, Battlefield Hardline. Yeah, none of them are World War II.
What the fuck?
They just got back to World War
I. Has Battlefield ever done World War II?
Yeah, 1942, like the first Battlefield.
Oh, right, yeah, right. Fuck.
And then they did that Xbox only, like, 1943 thing.
So as far as I'm concerned, they started with a showstopper. They started with the best World War II game, and ever since then, it's just been other shitty World War II games. That's kind of where I'm saying.
I liked Call of Duty 2. I like Brothers in Arms was a good game.
Fun memories of multiplayer 1942. Because back then...
Multiplayer 1942. I don't think there was a single player 1942.
Wasn't there? I don't think there was a single.
No, it was a multiplayer only game.
Yeah. And that was like the best multiplayer of the era at the time. Like, that's how I remember it. It was fucking incredible when that thing came out.
It's good to know that video games can't name things anymore. Call of Duty World War II, Battlefield 1.
At least
they've given up.
At least with Call of Duty World War II. So Battlefield 1 is egregious, right? This is not the first Battlefield. You just should call it Battlefield World War I. Like that, you assholes. At least Call of Duty just says what it does in the tin. Like you know what that game's about by looking at it. Okay.
But I mean, like, here's the thing, right? This isn't the first World War II Call of Duty game. Why couldn't they have just named it like Call of Duty
5?
No, just like Call of Duty, A World in Chaos or something. God. I don't know.
Think about that. Think of if that was the name. Everyone would be like, that's the most generic fucking name. At least in this case.
You play James Peterson
John
well,
Smith.
Well, that's exactly what you do. You play, let me see what this fucker's name is. You play as Ronald Red Daniels and Robert Zussman.
See, Ronald Red Daniels is actually a pretty unique name. I haven't heard a name like that before. It's white as hell,
but Red is his nickname. His actual name is Ronald Daniels.
Ronald Daniels. That's fucking white. That's a white ass white boy name. I love that. Just a couple weeks ago, we had so many good ideas for what this game could be. It's like, imagine it was like the Japanese side, or maybe it was like just Iwo Jima and you're Japan, and it's like.
No way. You play as the Brits and the French resistance for like one mission, I think.
I was gonna say they have this whole deal. How about there's like there's a female French resistance fighter that you play as, and that's apparently supposed to be a big deal that you're finally playing a woman character in a Call of Duty game. It still doesn't make me interested in seeing the French resistance.
There are no black
again.
People in this game. Yeah, I don't care about fucking surrender monkeys.
But even then, like, what's that game? That stupid game that was all black and white that did the French Resistance.
Saboteur. That looked like a cool game that I never played.
Well, it was a bad game, but it looked like a cool idea, and it never panned out. And then I realized, like, wait, no.
Well, there were boobies in the game.
There were boobies in the game. I didn't play
it. There was a boobie DLC. Oh.
I certainly did not play it because it was average like 70 something on Metacritic, and I was like, no, I don't have time.
Yeah, but it's a cool concept. I really like the concept of that game. One of the games that I wish I played, and when I played it, it was good.
It would be good if that mission.
If I played it,
here's the deal. Like, that's pretty much the only mission I'm interested in seeing in this case. Like, I would love for there to be a whole game that's kind of like that kind of, almost like what would you call it, spy movie-esque underground resistance kind of thing, you know, like where there's only like eight enemies in the whole game, and they're like actually really intense shootouts, and because like you're like only two shots to death, then fucking you're like in the middle of a enemy installation, and you're a spy and you're trying to make sure that no one else realizes that you killed this guy. Like there's a whole thing you can do around the French resistance, but I don't think they're going to do any of that. It's probably going to be.
They're going to go for the most lame. It's just going to be a reskinned American soldier mission. Literally. Just going to be with shittier weapons.
Pretty much.
But this is the thing. The more I think about this, the more I realize I'm not sick and tired of Modern Warfare. I'm just sick and tired of like Call of Duty.
Yes.
Doesn't excite me.
Exactly. And that's why I like the Infinite Warfare thing, where it was this space Call of Duty, because at least it has some interesting new ideas. And yeah, it was fun. I just can't deal with modern day Call of Duty or past Call of Duty. Like those are wrung out. And the problem with their space Call of Duty one is that they tripled down on space combat, which apparently no one liked, because it was just too simple or whatever. So like they've lost it. There's nothing a Call of Duty game can announce right now, unless it was actually interesting, which they're incapable apparently of doing. They wouldn't get anyone excited. So, boo-hoo for them is kind of the stance on that one. I don't know.
This fucking fails.
So, there's not much news this week. Let's be clear here. There's not much news this month. I trolled through the last month of Polygon and
Kotaku. I don't think we're going to get news until E3. When is that?
So that's like a month and a half away. It's not far. Like, let's see, E3 2017, June 13th to 15th is E3. The sad thing is I'm going to be doing stuff at work that period, so I won't be able to do, like, the whole, what we did last year. And awesome time. I won't be able to take that week off, I don't think. But maybe I can. I don't know. I have to figure out what's happening with work. But, it's only, like, 6 weeks away. June 13th. Let's have a look. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and a half. 6 and a half weeks away till E3. So it's just the slumber period as everyone kind of like takes the deep breath in after a million good games came out and we're still trying to finish them before the explosion that will be probably E3. Maybe. Not that I can see anything big.
I don't even think there's going to be big. Yeah, there's not going to be any big things at E3, is there?
I don't know.
You think there's going to be big new announcements? I feel like there won't be.
I think it's past that time. Like every generation has the same pattern, where at the start of the generation, you have a lot of huge promises, and they get you really excited. And in the middle of the generation, you have a lot of like amazing games come out. And then you have the teetering end of the generation, where you start looking forward to the next generation, but then the best games of the current generation come out. So, like, what's going to happen over the next couple of years, including this one, I guess, if you look at what just came out, the best games of this generation are happening around now, next year, and the year after, and then we're looking at 2018, 2019 for the next generation. Now, that's kind of where we're at. Like, and they're not going to be talking about PS5 at this year's E3. That's not going to happen. They might talk about it next year's E3, but I don't know. So
I guess they'll talk about that zombie game and the God of War game.
Exactly. So they'll be like Days Gone, God of War, and there'll probably be an update on Final Fantasy VII. What's happening the fuck with that? I bet Kingdom Hearts isn't going to make it this generation. I bet it's going to be pushed back to next generation.
All right. That other Final Fantasy game actually came out. How did that do?
Which one? Final Fantasy 15?
The one that came out last year, yeah.
Yeah, Final Fantasy XV did pretty well. I don't think it hit their expectations. Like, they were expecting like
20 million copies or something.
Exactly, ridiculous. I don't think it hit that, but it did very well. Like, people, and both critically and fan-wise, it was a change of pace. It's different from any other Final Fantasy game, and people appreciated that. Very few people thought it was shit. Which is good for a Final Fantasy game. Like, a lot of times it's very divided, but in that case, no one said it was amazing, but everyone thought it was pretty good. They still have Final Fantasy VII in the works, remake, and we already know it's multiple parts. I wonder how that's going to go. This E3, I don't see anything exciting happening. And in that
next Mass Effect game.
Oh, God.
That's coming out.
You know, there's gonna be another one.
End of this year.
There's gonna be another one. Like it, even no matter how bad Mass Effect was, it was their highest pre-ordered game of all time, or something, or of the series, or something.
When's the next Dragon Effect or Dragon Age or whatever?
That's actually a good question. I really look forward to the next Dragon Age. Those Inquisition was good. Like I really.
They're solid games. Solid games. Yeah.
Like we're in a weird period of time where the last couple of months just only good games came out apparently, and I don't know.
I'm told that's what happened. I don't know.
Like
I'm just told that is the case.
I've heard like the average of the top 10 games. I was just listening to Easy Allies podcast, and the average of the top 10 games of this last 4 months is, I believe, the highest 4 month period of all time, and also like it's over 90 on Metacritic. Like the top 10 games of the last quarter is over fucking 90. So that's insane. So like last year, I think only a couple games, like a handful of games, got over 90 on Metacritic and OpenCritic. And this year, like the top 10 games averaged above that. It's just fucking insane. Fuck. And so I don't really know what this year can do for me aside from Red Dead. And that's not going to be this year. Like
well, there's there's
Prey?
Shenmue 3. Prey.
Shenmue's not happening this year either. That's not a thing.
No, it's not. Destiny 2.
Destiny 2 could be good. Like it won't be like a 9 out of 10 game, I don't think.
No.
But it's going to be a good game.
Maybe. Maybe they've learned.
I'll probably end up playing Destiny 2 more than any of these other games. Weirdly enough. I don't know. Anyway, speaking of news, though, Nintendo has announced that, like previous years, they will not be having a stage presence at this E3, which I was sad about.
What the fuck do they have to announce? What the fuck do they have to announce anymore?
There's something really important to announce, i.e. the games for their Switch thing. Because
they're not coming for another year.
Exactly.
Well, no, Minecraft, as I noted at the beginning of the show, is coming out in 2 weeks.
Oh, man, I can't wait for that.
What else do they need? Minecraft is literally the only game you need.
My friend is, like, freaking overjoyed. He just sent me a SMS last night of him picking up Mario Kart. So some people are happy. But for everyone else, like, the sane people in the world, there's, like, nothing coming. There's Splatoon 2, which I couldn't give less of a fuck about.
All I'm saying is anybody who bought the Switch made a mistake. That's all I'm saying. That controversial.
No, yeah, you're not wrong. Like, I have a Switch, and you're not wrong. I probably would have had more fun with a Wii U than the Switch. Like, I probably should have just bought a Wii U and then sold it again.
You would have had games.
Exactly. I would have been playing Shin Megami Tensei, and I would have been playing Zelda on that, which doesn't run badly.
How much was the Switch?
I think in total, if I was to say Canadian dollars, I spent like 700 Canadian dollars in the total.
Should have just gotten a Vive.
Oh my god, don't no, because well, we can run.
I don't need an upgrade for a Vive anymore.
Exactly. Like a Vive is now like easy tier, but then like that's almost got the same issues
minus the actual cost of the Vive. Yeah.
but like, what games are there for VR? Like, I don't see anything coming. This is the thing. It's like, what is
Tilt Brush?
It feels like the day after Christmas or the day after your birthday, where it's like, oh well, I guess there's nothing in the next.
Well,
half
you need
year.
To specify that it's like the day after your birthday if you lived in Africa. there is actually nothing. It's not even like a matter of, oh, I don't know what to choose. It's like, oh no. Oh, I live here now.
It's apparently we saved up all the food and cake for my birthday, and now there's nothing. We're just famine. It's just famine for the rest of the year.
Like, actually, what's on VR? More than a year into real, or like actually a year. It's been a year since VR came out now.
Yeah, there's nothing. As far as I can say,
there's fuck all.
I couldn't name a game I'm interested in VR at the moment. I think that same game we said was cool last year still hasn't come out. What the fuck is that named with the robots and the shooting the teleporter?
Paper Cuts or whatever?
Whatever that is.
Budget Cuts.
No, not Budget Cuts. It's not Budget Cuts. Is it Budget Cuts?
Is that it?
Okay, I'm gonna Google budget cuts.
That's budget.
See, I didn't even remember the name of the fucking
game. Every time I go to like the new releases, there's always like a 5 game that comes out once a week or more.
But like,
there's a lot
of
like
games you'd want to play.
No, and they're all like $35 because nobody buys these.
Yeah, so Budget Cut still looks cool, but like, yeah, I will not be playing any of this. I can't even see a technology in the near future that would make me interested in VR. Like, I was saying for a long time that I was waiting for wireless. But now if you told me that there was a wireless VR headset, I wouldn't be that interested in it. It just come down to the games, and there's just nothing.
Give me 10 more years.
Yeah. And that's not a bad thing. That's what I was saying. Like, I think we said this last year when, after we realized that, wait, no, there's nothing being announced for Vive that anyone wants to play. If Vive and the Oculus die again and it just goes away for another 10 years, that's probably a good thing. If you look at the freaking advancement between 1990s VR and 2017 VR, if you just see that leap again over the next 10 years, that's give me that VR. Give me the one that's in the future. That's probably closer to what we actually want. And for now, it can be like a weird government/developmental/fucking fringe science area of people experimenting with the current VR headsets until they figure out how to make them awesome and games good. Anyway, so yeah, Nintendo doesn't have an E3 thing. Surprise. They're probably just going to be Super Mario all over that. See, Nintendo people are just looking forward to Mario. Mario Odyssey, and I couldn't give again less of a fuck about that game. I'm gonna buy and play it just because I have a Switch and I promised I would. Just in the same way, I'm gonna eventually finish Zelda this year, probably after I finish Nier. But yeah, no, this is nothing for me. This is nothing for any of us, noob. This is, I don't know.
Glad I didn't get a Switch.
Finally, news. This is for me. This is a me piece of news.
Okay.
I'm not sure anyone else cares, but like, people discovered by domain name monitoring that Atlas has registered a couple new domain names, and there's things like P5D, P5U, P5 like RT or something. There's like weird like other like. There's a couple letters after the letters P5, and then there's P3D and a couple others, and this is like really far off in terms of like what the outputs from this are, but it's pretty obvious that there's going to be a new Persona Ultimax game, like the fighting games for those that series, and I'm super excited for Persona 5 fighting. I don't know, it's those are cool, like the only games that like mix up the eras. So like, he had Persona 3 and those characters came back in Persona 4 fighting, and the cool thing is it's part of the lore. It's like stated that they're canon, and it's like a couple years later, and P3, they're in high school, so you see them like in their college years and they're like off doing stuff. Like, there's a dude who was like a really preppy, really rich student who like went off. And in when he comes back in Persona 4 fighting, he's like being on a Ryu-esque trip across the world with like his shirt off, just fighting people for a living. Like, a girl just became like a TV star, and like, you get to see everyone come back. That's really cool. And if they do that again for Persona 5 fighting and they have like the Persona 3 characters come back and they're even older, and the Persona 4 characters come back and they're a bit older, and then you have the Persona 5 characters mixed in, like, that could be a really fun thing that I wouldn't mind seeing. And then you have P3D, which a lot of people are excited about because they think that's Persona 3 Diamond Edition. And that could be awesome because Persona 3 is a fantastic game. Almost as good as Persona 4, in my opinion. In my opinion so far, not to spoil later in this podcast, but it goes Persona 4, Golden, then Persona 5, then Persona 3, in terms of like the top three of that genre of games, of these high school sim / RPG genre, which is apparently slowly becoming a genre. That's it. That's news, noob.
Wow.
That's the grand total.
That's fucking exciting. Holy shit. Now I have another reason to keep living and breathing for another day. This is
it's so great. I mean, we good stupid hardware stuff. But there's no reason to talk about it. Like the 1080 Ti came out, and that's good. Like it's just stuff
well,
that happened
had,
over
the
last
AMD
months,
released but... another card.
Yeah, and they're pretty much just 10% faster than the current ones, and no one's particularly excited. Vega is probably coming out by the end of next month, but shrug, we don't really know anything about it. I have no faith in Vega.
Not buying a new graphics card at any point in the next year. No plans to.
Probably will. Okay, so I'm still waiting for a graphics card that does 4K Ultra 60 on everything without issues. The 1080 Ti comes close. Yeah. It's probably not going to be this year. It's probably going to be 1180 or 1180 Ti. That's probably what it's end up going to be.
Yep.
But if Vega gets...
Or maybe not. That's the thing. Or maybe not. And and there's nothing you can do about it because it's not like there's competition in the graphics card market.
Exactly. Like fucking... We need Vega to be good, and after Polaris, I'd have strong doubts that it will be. So it'll be good, but it won't be good enough. It'll probably be like 10% slower than the 1080s, and that won't be good enough. I'm sorry. You need to actually step the whole system forward, and then I don't think they can do that. With that, though, as I said, it's going to be a short episode. Noob-rama. It's just us two. I've already said what I've been playing, but I'll talk about it at the end of the show. What have you been up to?
I've been playing this awesome new release.
Oh, God.
Skyrim Standard Edition. Not
Thank
the special
you.
Edition. The Standard Edition.
Yeah. Wait.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I decided I wanted to go back and play some Skyrim since everybody was playing the special edition or whatever.
Are we still having running bet that you think that the next Elder Scrolls is going to be announced this year?
I know. I have insider information. I can confirm that this E3, the next Elder Scrolls and Fallout game will be announced.
So, wait. You are a Fallout person. You liked Skyrim?
Skyrim was, yeah, I loved Skyrim.
Because remember, you've never actually finished Skyrim, nor even come close to finishing any of the quest lines.
No, but, you know, I have, let's see how many hours I have on Skyrim recorded on Steam.
What is wrong
Elder
with you?
Elder Scrolls.
That was
Elder
a fantastic
Scrolls,
game.
Elder Scrolls. No, I love Skyrim. I have like 400 hours in Skyrim.
What
I have 400 hours in Skyrim.
But you haven't done
right?
any of the quest stuff.
I have
You've
400
just done...
hours. And then I played more of it, and then like I'm like, oh, I played all of this already. And I just didn't want to keep going, so I stopped playing. So what I did instead was I booted up Fallout and restarted Fallout on Survival. And it's like, I played most of this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to play it again, but I keep trudging through.
Oh, how about that Fallout VR, dude? That's what happens. Are you being
like
serious right now?
The biggest blockage there for me, mm-hmm. right, is I can't run it to look as good as it does now on VR.
Really? You sure?
If I could, I'm pretty sure.
Well, Fallout isn't a particularly good-looking game. It looks kind of
bad. I know, but getting it to 180 frames per second.
What's 120?
With no hitching. Is 120. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. But I have all of these mods and stuff that make it look good.
Okay.
And I can't do that.
I would have thought that the boundary would be like
everywhere.
Buying a whatever Oculus
no,
or whatever.
If I could make the game look as good as it does now on my computer, I would get a VR.
Because they probably like fucking had some time to work on it and make it look a little bit better between them.
I don't know. It took Bethesda 6 years to release Skyrim Special Edition, and it doesn't look any different.
God.
So
It looks better. It just doesn't look great.
No,
this doesn't look particularly great at all.
Like my insider sources tell me that this new Skyrim is on the Gamebryo engine,
right? Fucking
an unmodified version of the Gamebryo engine, so it'll look exactly like Oblivion, but with more textures.
Wait, did what the fuck? Fallout, is that just Gamebryo?
That's Gamebryo.
They need to fucking. They need to switch to id Software shit. That was the whole thing we were hoping for, right? We were hoping
yep.
for them to switch to id Tech, And they never did. That's not gonna. That's not gonna happen.
No.
I'm still after this discussion of old games that we want to return to. I'm still waiting for the Necromancer to be added to Diablo 3. I'm still waiting for it. For fuck's sake.
They're talking about redoing Diablo 2.
Oh man. There's like this
like
this
HD. I mean, they're gonna fuck it up.
There's gifts on the website of the Necromancer in action, and there's going to be a female Necro, and she looks great. I usually don't play female characters, but the female Necro looks fucking awesome. I want to play Necro so bad.
Just play Diablo 2. Forget about Diablo 3.
Oh, man.
Forget about it.
I put Diablo 3 is really good now, though.
Yeah.
This is the level of excitement we have about the topics we have right now.
Right, like, I don't know, Googling video other games suck. Steel Division
got so awesome
Normandy.
That we have nothing. What?
I've been playing Steel Division Normandy. This is like the same. This is the same people who make War Game. It's a video game called War Game. I kid you not. But it's like this World War II real-time strategy game. It's pretty good. It's on early access right now, but it'll be out, I think, later this year.
Okay.
It's good.
So you're playing your early access game.
And then finally... Yeah, and then so that way I don't have to play it when it comes out and all the bugs are fixed, you know.
That's fair. Yeah.
And then finally, I've been playing Player Unknown Battlegrounds, PUBG, PUBG.
So this is like I saw a quick look for this a while ago, and it just seemed like boring, generic blah. And then suddenly it turns out that no, this is the game that everyone is playing right now. Like I don't even understand.
This is to kickstart my Twitch career. I've gotten a boob job and grow my hair out, and I'm going to start a Twitch career by playing this hot game.
Oh my god! What is?
It's literally DayZ without any of the zombies. That's like 100% of it. It's like Battle Royale, a popular mod for Arma 3. I think it's the person who made Battle Royale mod. That's who Player Unknown is.
That's the deal. I heard that, like, my friend described it, and he's a Twitch streamer, like, for better or worse. He describes it as a it is essentially, like, it might be, I think I'm thinking of the same game. It is essentially Battle Royale to the point where you spawn with not random items, but you spawn with like a near random items, but at the same time, like, the whole idea is there's only one person left at the end. Is that the idea? It's like they slowly...
No, so what happens is you have nothing. You have nothing. Mm-hmm. And then you fly out of a plane.
Right.
You jump out of a plane at some point.
Onto an island,
while
right?
the plane is flying. Onto an island. And you have to just pick up stuff, right?
Right.
But then, as the time progresses... Exactly. As time progresses, there's like a circle that goes smaller and smaller and smaller to put all the people together, and there's like a single player mode, a duo mode, and a four player mode, and you or your team has to be the last one standing in the circle, because if you're out of the circle, you slowly die. And it's fine.
Like bombs are dropped.
I don't know.
Circle, right? That's kind of interesting.
No, you just die. There's artillery that happens in the zone, actually, like in the circle, to make people not camp and stuff like that, but it's not very effective. But anyways, it's like the hot thing to play now. Player Unknown Battlegrounds. It's fine. I don't know.
It's fun
when you play with friends. I wouldn't play it alone, ever.
Really? Because it seems like this is what everyone is playing. I don't know. Is it because it's the thing everyone's... Is this like a self-fulfilling prophecy where everyone's playing it, therefore everyone plays it? Is that kind of what's happening here?
I think it's the same crowd who liked DayZ and H1Z1, etc. But they're sick and fucking tired of those two things.
They're like the MMO crowd where they move from one thing to the next thing to the next thing.
Exactly. And this also includes all the people who play Arma 3 Survival or whatever. That's super popular. And that's like 90% of the reason that people play Arma 3. They've also moved to this. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, I guess that's the thing. So do you like this game and like... What is it like playing it? Why are you playing it?
It's like 6 or 7 out of 10. I play it because other people play it. And it's fun when you play with other people because it's like It's literally like surviving and trying to get be the last person. I wish it was more slower paced. Like the circle didn't close as fast, and there was more.
How fast does it take?
More tension to sort
how
of.
Long, sorry, how long does it take?
Like a game, a whole game of so a game has 100 people, regardless of. So if it's four players, it's going to be four teams of or 25 teams of four,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's always 100 people on the same island, and the games are usually about 20 minutes long. So it's pretty short, actually, if you consider that there's 100 people, right? That's only assuming you make it to the first place.
Right. Man.
But I think me and my friends have done very well so far. Like, I've won probably about 6 times.
Holy shit.
I've played about 20
6
games.
Times. Wow.
Yeah.
Like, your
yeah.
team?
Well, like,
or just
I haven't
you?
Soloed. My team, okay. Yeah. Duo or four people, but...
I was
going
to say, like,
first.
You being a badass to the point where you become the single sole survivor is beyond my reckoning
no.
as to yep. what you are as a player of games.
but like, yeah, we've won 6 times. I played about 25 games, 20, 25 games. But it's fun. It's like exactly what it seems like is it's Daisy and it's fun to play once in a while. And I don't know how Daisy works, to be honest, but this game has a lot less permanency, so you don't have to feel like the only thing you get from playing a lot is cosmetic clothes. So it's fine to just it's a great game to just hop on if you want to play something
right.
for 20 minutes, it's, as long as there's someone else.
So it's 20 minutes and 100 people go down to 4 or 2 or 1.
Yeah.
That is really fast.
And
pace.
I just
that is really fast paced.
Yeah, and I think also one thing that's like a negative is currently there's a third person. Well, like you can do third person or first person. You can switch between the views.
Mm-hmm.
And like it gets to the point where because it's like rounding corners, etc., third person gets a little gamey. I'm
right.
waiting for a first person only. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, cool. The Necromancer has a blink. That's what I've...
That's stealing right from they culturally appropriated that from the sorceress.
Exactly.
Motherfucker.
Essentially, Necro is becoming like this sorceress Necro combo. And I love the look of it. Like, I can't wait. Anyway, apparently, when they posted this, which was at the end of last, oh no, middle of last year, it was early in development. So I assume, considering Diablo 3 has been out for a long time, they have to be done with Necromancer by now. They have to be ready. Maybe, when's BlizzCon?
This is Blizzard.
BlizzCon.
I don't know. Oh, BlizzCon is in September, isn't it?
Oh, fucking come on. Yeah, November 3rd to 4th.
Yeah.
It better happen before fucking BlizzCon. Come on. Fucking goddamn it. Announce it last year. Don't do it for fucking... Anyway.
They're going to announce the release date on BlizzCon.
So, both of us sound really excited about fucking PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Yeah, I'm fucking pumped, dude. This is the only reason I'm even alive speaking to you.
If people are wondering, like, what the deal is about our recording schedule, no one's really wanted to record because nothing has happened aside from people are busy with
yeah,
playing games rather than talking about games. Yeah. Like it's not like there's nothing to do right now. I guess we can move on to what I've been doing. It's going to be just short, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm 80 hours into Persona 5.
Fucking hell.
Over like a 2-week period, like I'm playing on weekends, I'm playing full like 14-hour days in Persona 5. I'm just dumping time into that game. Dude, it is fantastic. Like
is
I fucking
good?
Love that game.
Is it a
yes.
good game? Yeah.
It is incredible. Like last time recorded.
Is your game of the year?
So far without a doubt. Like there's no I haven't even gotten to the twist yet.
Oh, right. These games have twists.
Yeah, they always have a twist at the last couple. Because all of them are set over a year, right? And it usually starts at the start of school year. So about March-ish in Japan time or whatever.
Right.
And so, like, they go from, like, March to March-ish, like, depending on the game. Sometimes they finish in December. I'm up to November at the moment. And that's usually when... And like for a point of reference, Atlas has announced that the people are only allowed to stream up to, as a change to their policy before they weren't allowed to stream the game at all, now they're allowed to stream up to like the 20th of November or something. So I know the twist is coming up. I'm at like the 10th of November.
That's fucking retarded. Why are they allowed to do this?
Well, they're not allowed to.
Wait, so if you post, you can't post a video of the game past that date?
So when the game came out,
this is some Nintendo ass shit. Like, yeah, Nintendo profiteering. Do you remember this? Nintendo is like, oh yeah, we'll give you a 30% of whatever you stream. Okay, yeah,
it's kind of like
very
that.
Very gracious. Yeah.
So like it was rough. Like we didn't talk about this because it's like a kind of really small point. Because anyone who wants to stream it can stream it. Because the idea is, the inbuilt PlayStation 4 streaming app, allows developers to put in restrictions. So if you're doing like what I would do, which is just like using remote play to your PC and just streaming that out, or having a
Handheld camera with your cell phone.
Sure. if you're doing any of those sensible things, then there's no issues because there's nothing to really stop you. They've been putting down takedown notices on YouTube, but on Switch. On Twitch, they're not. So essentially, you can.
So they are actually taking videos down.
Yeah. So their policy was: this is a story focused game, and we do not want people to spoil the game. And that was the Japan stance, and the U.S. guys had to break the news, and they got fucking flooded by people who were just like, "What the fuck is wrong with you? That's not how things work in 2017. What, you guys are all crazy? Like sensible things. Like that is stupid. You can't do that in 20. That's like half of video games now is just the streaming and consumption of streams. Straight up, like I would say half the industry right now is just that. So essentially, just this week, they relaxed the policy. So the U.S. guys got battered, but it was the Japan head honchos that put down the foot on it. And it's pretty much Sega. It's not necessarily the Persona team, by the sounds of things. It seems like it was Sega that did it as the publisher. And then they got hammered. And
I don't know. Sega's happy with me streaming Sonic the Hedgehog. They didn't take down any of my videos.
Sure.
Is it because Japan doesn't have video game streaming, I guess? That's not really a thing
essentially,
there.
Essentially, yeah. I don't know enough about Japanese culture to say for certain, but it feels like with the lack of... Like, Japanese media usually reflects Japan, right? Like, anime usually reflects, like, high school culture... games usually reflect high school culture and like teenage culture and mid-20s culture, and in like none of those do you see any reflection of there being a streaming culture in Japan. There's a massive idol culture, there's a massive like weird fucking otaku shit going on, but I don't see any media reflecting a streaming culture in Japan, nor any Japanese games having streaming features built in. So it doesn't feel like they have a... Like, that's based on that evidence. I don't feel like they have a lot of streaming culture in Japan. Like, they have fan streams. So they have, like, when Street Fighter V came out,
But it's just, like, people talking.
Exactly. Just people talking over pre-recorded footage most of the time. It's, like, not them actively playing game. Like, the closest thing to it was some of the top Street Fighter V players streamed while talking Street Fighter V. But that's a competitive game. That's a very different thing to a story-based game. So I don't know if they have the same thing over there. But they clearly don't understand. And so this week, they relaxed the policies so that you can stream anywhere up to November 20th in the game.
So is that the twist, I guess?
So at the start of the game, all the trailers that you saw before the game's release, so with like him breaking out of this casino and then getting caught by the police and then being interrogated... the main character, that is, that's all in the first 10 minutes of the game. But that's like, it's like, you're doing that, and it's like, this is how I got here. It's like one of those things where it's like, oh, this is the current day, and it's, they rewinds back. And so I already know that that's November, because it says on those screens, whenever you flash forward back to there, it goes to November. So I already know that's what's going to happen. So I know the start of the game already shows the setup to the twist, so I already knew November... Like, late November would be the twist. I just don't know what the twist is. And you know what? To some extent, that means that... It kind of means that it's working. Like, it's to be fair, I'm like media blackout in Persona.
But I mean, like the thing is, I didn't know the ending to Life is Strange. Right?
That's true. Exactly. Like, I'm not consuming.
I didn't know
streams,
the ending.
So
exactly.
Yeah. So it's like I'm already self-selecting out of knowing what like spoilers. Like, I already wouldn't be seeing.
I've never actually had something. Yeah, I've never actually had something that I didn't want to be spoiled to me.
Right, and like. The closest I got was like Harry Potter spoilers, and even then, those weren't particularly huge. I didn't get the Dumbledore, blah, 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 or the Snape killed Dumbledore. I didn't get any of that stuff. So, yeah, no, I've not been a person. I've been good at avoiding spoilers my whole life.
I've spoiled things for people. Now, that's a different thing entirely, but I have not spoiled, been spoiled myself.
You're a piece of shit.
So many ruined Star Wars spoilers.
You are
oh.
Piece of shit.
Oh, Han Solo died, guys. Oh,
that's
Han
whatever.
Solo died.
That's not a big deal. I for me, it was like a I actually did get spoiled once, but I didn't realize it because someone when BioShock Infinite came out, someone said, Comstock is Booker and Booker's Elizabeth's father. In the thing, but that was so ridiculous that I was like, ha, that's not true. And then when it happened in the game, I'd forgotten that it had been spoiled for me. So it's like, it was fine. It worked out okay. So yes, I put 80 hours into Persona 5.
Spoiler alert.
Exactly.
That's crazy. That's a lot of hours to get to the spoiler.
Exactly. It's a lot of hours to get to probably the 80% mark of the game. To be fair, I think the average playtime of Persona 5 is 100 hours.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a big Japanese RPG. And the crazy thing is, though, it's not like like other Japanese RPGs where it's like the first 20 hours are all story and then it's like all open world for the second half, like the next 60 hours, and then you have a little bit of story at the end. Like most Japanese RPGs, like funnel you at the start and then open up and then like you go around and do whatever you want. And this is like... It starts really funnily, and that's when last time we had a podcast, it was me and Doran talking about it, and I was actually not that impressed by the game. It starts like it really, really funnily. Like, it actually just really gets you into it and doesn't give you much freedom. But when it does open up, it gets to the point where, like, every time there's story in this game, I'm looking forward to it, but also not looking forward to it because it gives me less time to do the things I want, the other things I want to do. Like, I want to do everything in this game. That's what this game has done to me. Like, I want to see all aspects of this game because they're all compelling. I don't even know how they did that. I have no idea. Like, I only just got to the point where I've maxed all my social stats. So, it's mid-November. Okay, so people don't know, Persona games are Japanese RPGs, yes. They're a mixture of dating sims and traditional RPGs. But... I've described it as a friend as you're essentially spinning not a couple plates, but you're the whole idea of Persona games is you're spinning like 20 plates because you have 15 or so social links, i.e. like relationships with people that you want to maximize. And like by maximize, I'm literally like they have levels. The more you spend time with people and like investigate their backstories and all that kind of stuff, the more that level of your link with that person grows, and every link maxes at 10. So you have to get from level 1 through 10, and each couple of levels in this game, unlike previous games, everyone gives you like a bonus. So like some people will let you get more money at the end of battles, or at the start of battles when you ambush people, you can get all the enemies to half HP, or like when you're caught by enemies, you no longer raise the suspicion of the person who owns the castle that you're in and stuff like that. There's like a lot of really good benefits from every social link of this game. So there's 15 plates there that you're spinning because you have a limited amount of time. You have 1 year to finish this game. You have 15 social links to max. You have 8 dungeons, I think, to finish, or maybe 9. I don't know. I'm at dungeon 6 now. I think there's 2 more or maybe 1 more. So maybe 6 to 8 dungeons to finish. Each dungeon takes 3 to 4 days. There's a lot of... But you also go to school, so you have exams, you have school trips, you have... just like class and shit, like just they're just gets in the way and takes up your time. You have public holidays and stuff that like sometimes you're like going off and doing stuff with friends with those days. But then you have work that you have to go to, and then you have the social links. So you have like a bunch of different stuff there. And then on top of that, you have social stats. So some people, like, you have to be kind enough to talk to this person about this issue. So you have to go off and like raise your kindness by like reading books.
Wow. The worst. Oh my God. It's the Sims.
This five social stats, this proficiency, guts, kindness,
that's
intelligence.
Too much. Character management. That's too much. With a time limit? No, thank you.
It is insane how much fucking like stuff there is.
You like sometimes you basically it's you might have for most people they have to do more than one playthrough to get all the social links.
So
or get all of
the craziest thing though, right? In past Persona 3, to get a one playthrough run where you can actually max every social link, because in Persona 3, you didn't have to have all your social stats maxed to max all your social links. The only one you really needed maxed was knowledge to get with Mitsuru, I think it was. So in that game, but even then, with Persona 3, you had to do like a perfect playthrough. There's only like a couple ways to do it. And I'm talking about like, considering you're playing this over a whole year in game, we're talking about like, probably a near infinite permutation of ways to do things. There's only like a couple, like a handful of ways to finish Persona 3 and actually get every social links maxed in one playthrough. That was ridiculous. No one did it. Everyone played that game multiple times to get that done, especially since the second time you play it through, you keep all your social stats. So all that time management for social stats is like gone. So you have all this free time now because you don't have to worry about that. So everyone usually maxes out in the second playthrough. Persona 4, it was the same thing. Persona 4 Golden, though, made it a bit more lax, gave you more ways to raise stuff without passing time. So, for example, I could... So, say someone had an issue and I had to spend time with them before we could progress our social link to the next level. And I could get deeper with their backstory and all that kind of stuff. That would usually involve me spending like a couple of days with them, just not even like gaining anything from it, just getting closer to them, like spending time with them, like going to the park or whatever. In Persona 4 Golden, they introduced a way called the shrine where you could pray at this shrine and that would raise a social link in a time slot where you couldn't hang out with them. So say you're at nighttime and there's no one to hang out with at nighttime, so you have nothing to do. So you could pray at the shrine and you could raise a social link with someone that you couldn't hang out with at nighttime. Now, in this, they took... Essentially, Persona 5 feels like the perfect, in terms of systems, Persona game. To the point where it's like, I don't even understand how, like, the level of math they had to do in the background to get it this good. Because apparently, it is actually quite easy, if you manage it right and just do sensical things, to max every social link and every social stat in one playthrough in this game. And that's not just like a pie in the sky thing. I'm pretty sure I'm close to doing that. Like, I've got every social stat maxed, and then I've only got three social links left, and two of them are on level 8. One of them's on level 1, because I only just met her. And I've got, like, another 2 months to go. Like, it's actually very likely that this is, like, in terms of time management, this is the... Even though it feels like it crushes you the whole time, and you feel this constant urge, like, oh shit, no, I need to be constantly like, okay, I can't spend time with him, so I'm going to go to the fortune teller so I can pray, so I don't spend time there, and then I'm going to then pray to the fortune teller again to, like, raise a social stat, and then I'm going to go batting, and I have to make sure I hit all the balls perfectly so I can raise my proficiency at the end of it by 3 points instead of two, and then I have to go to the dungeon. And it sounds like I can see why it sounds like tedious, but it's not, because it's all really engaging, because you want to hear the next story beat. You want to hear the next issue that this person has, or why you need to have kindness to talk to them, or you want that the satisfaction.
Does it carry over into the next playthrough, like in Persona 4?
So all social stats carry over. That still carries over. But like previous Persona games, all social links are reset to zero.
Okay.
So to be fair, though, like half my time, no, not half, but a good third of my time is social stat grinding. So like over the last month or so, like November and October has been a third social stat grinding, where because in this game, unlike previous games, essentially you need every social stat maxed to max with everyone. And that's what I mean where I say like this is like the perfect one of these, because in one playthrough, I usually couldn't even max one social stat, nor max all social links if I just played it how I felt like playing it. But this time I'm doing both, and the dungeons are the best they've ever been, because before every dungeon was like this random kind of series of corridors that would just had a theme. So like you had the bathhouse, which was just like a bathhouse theme with it was all steamy and there's all the gay dudes and whatever. You run through that and there'd be multiple randomized dungeon levels. But in this, every dungeon is like handcrafted and they all have like a whole different theme and different like puzzle elements and like different, like entirely different monsters, because it's insane how much depth and detail this game goes to. Like, I just can't even believe what the fuck they put into this game. It's incredible. Like, that's my takeaway so far with Persona 5. Like, it's not my... I think it is the best Persona game. It is not my favorite Persona game, because that's probably always going to be Persona 4 Golden. But damn, man. It's like the level of polish. Like, you can see why this game took 7 or 8 years or whatever it was to make. Like, you could feel it in this game. It's just, wow. Like, and there's no part of it that feels tedious. And there's no part of... And even the battles are the slickest they've ever been. The fastest they've ever been. All the allies are the best in terms of like performance in battle that they've ever been. Like, all of them have really good move sets this time instead of just being kind of trash tier. There's like they've made way better ways of managing like stamina and all, like a lot of different things in battle. That's just awesome. A lot of the side quests are the side quests are the least interesting they've ever been, I think, but. At the same time, because they're all like dungeon crawls. There's two types of dungeons. There's the actual real dungeons, and then there's this thing called Mementos, which is like a continuous, like old school Persona, 15 level deep per tier and like 8-tier big dungeon that you're making your way through 1 month at a time. Each month you go one tier lower. And there's apparently something really dark at the bottom of that. But the Mementos is kind of where all the side quests lead you, and that's kind of boring because I don't like Mementos. It's just like a randomized blah dungeon where all the enemies are lame and kind of ones you've seen before. But that aside, like that one thing aside, everything else in this game just feels perfect to a level that's just like I can't even understand that I haven't even got to the point where like, the plot stepped up. The game starts in March. The plot steps up in about September. And then it's like really gets into the gear. It's like, oh shit, shit's getting real. And now it's November. And it's like, oh shit, like we are against the ropes. Like we really need to pull something out here. And that's before the twist even gets here in end of November. I can't wait to see where this game goes. Like I'm already sitting here at a 5-star rating. My favorite game of the year. It's going to be interesting seeing where this game goes. But that's essentially my preferred.
What if the ending sucks? What if the ending sucks?
That's my deepest fear. Is that the ending sucks and
it only has a 39 on Famitsu.
Yeah, I know, right? Only a 39 out of 40. Oh man. And it's like what? Still 94 Metacritic? I think it went down to 93 for like a day and then went back up to 94 Metacritic.
See what is No, it's on 93 Metacritic.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
For PS4.
Yeah, that's it's only on it's on PS4 and PS3. So that's fine. I'd probably say it's a good 95 is what I give it, just because Mementos is kind of boring. And like I don't think
is it better than Mass Effect 2?
is it better?
Is it better than Mass Effect 2?
I heard Mass Effect Andromeda because a trailer started playing.
Of course Mass Effect Andromeda is better. But is it better than Mass Effect 2?
They're very different games. This is more polished than Mass Effect 2.
Fair enough.
So in terms
there's
of
there's a lot less scanning for minerals.
Exactly. In terms of characters I love, it'd probably go Persona 4 Golden, Mass Effect 2, and then Persona 5 in terms of that order. In terms of, oh no, then Last of Us somewhere in there as well. Like This is below, primarily because of the writing and characters. Like, the game is pretty much perfect. Like, I would not change, except for Mementos, and that only to some extent, because it has its uses to get money and all that kind of stuff, and how much, there's so many ways to spend money in this game that's kind of, you kind of need that. But it's almost, it's pretty much perfect in terms of gameplay. It's pretty much just that there's like no single character in this game that I've fallen in absolute love with. Whereas in Persona 4, I fell in love with like four or five of the characters in that game. And I just like, I'll forever remember their storylines and their character development arcs and all kinds of like fucking like Naruto, Nanako, fucking Dojima, fucking like fucking Kanji, Yosuke, like Chie, like fucking everyone in Persona 4 is like a top tier, excellently written, fun to be around character that has a great backstory that you want to go behind. Same with Mass Effect 2, like Garrus, fucking Legion, like not I didn't actually like Tally, Jack, fucking
kill Tally.
You like Tally? Did you kill Tally?
I killed Tally.
Oh wow.
Yes.
Right. Warden Solus, like everyone in fucking Mass Effect 2, even Grunt, he was Mass Effect 2, right? Like he was he Mass Effect 3? I forget.
Yeah, Grunt's Mass Effect 2. Exactly. No, Grunt's Mass Effect 2.
Even Grunt, who was supposed to be like a shitty version of Rex, but actually ended up as a really fun guy I liked hanging out with. Yeah, Mass Effect 2 is really top tier. Like those two games and The Last of Us with Joel and Ellie, like those three games, I put those characters on like a pedestal, and it really takes something special to get up there. And this doesn't have that. Like there's no character in Persona 5 that I like as much as any of those characters I just named. In fact, I probably forget most of the cast's name, partially because they're like really almost impenetrable Japanese names. Like fucking An is, her last name is like Takamaki or something. Like there's not, they're not that memorable, and An is that not that memorable at a name versus Chie. Like it's, you know, it's
are you dubbing or are you playing subs?
I always play dubbed for Persona. Mm-hmm. and the dub's good. Like it's not as good as the Persona 4 dub, and that's another reason, that's another mark against this game. Some of the localization early game, so I've it's all sorted out now to some extent. Like I haven't seen any issues in the last 60 or so hours, but the first 10 hours there's a lot of moments there where the localization is kind of bad, which is a really unfortunate time to have bad localization, like the first 10 hours of your game. It's like, what, that's kind of where you should be putting your effort. But no, the last 60 hours has been fine. The voice acting's been great. It's just that, yeah, there's just the characters themselves, man. It just really just comes down to, well, it comes down to this. Persona 3, every Persona game has a theme. Persona 3, it's both in a color and a feeling. Persona 3 was green and blue. Blue and green, like some people, I'd actually say, yeah, probably blue. And the theme of Persona 3 was like despair and sadness and like loss. That was the theme of Persona 3. So it was a really kind of a depressing, kind of dark game that I didn't really feel. Persona 4 was yellow, and it was all about like happiness and fun times and friendship. And a lot of people found that saccharine sweet, but I just loved it. It just feels good. Like every time you go to Persona 4, it feels like a warm hug. And every character just feels, you just want to hug every character in that game. Like even like the side characters, like Death, which is an old lady who's just like mourning her dead husband. But like seeing, every character has like a hopeful outlook at the end of that game. Like at the end of Death's, even Death, like each arcana has like a person that's associated with him. Her social link, the end of it is she's looking forward to life again and looking forward to her twilight years and has gotten over her husband's death. Like every single one of them end in like a really happy, hopeful thing. And that's what makes me love Persona 4 and it makes it feel so warm and friendly. Persona 5's theme is red and it's anger. So every character has like a dark kind of past where someone wronged them and they want revenge, or they fucked up in their path and want redemption, but they needed to get redemption by like overcoming some evil. Like there's a lot of angst in Persona 5, and that's just not really my personal
emo.
It's not really emo though. It's just anger. It's not like the world sucks. It's not. It's more like, no, these people suck and we have to punish them. Like it's a really like, it's almost vengeful and vindictive kind of feeling behind it. Every character has that. So like there's a reporter you go up with, and her boss is a piece of shit. And like midway through her social link, you're like, she's like, that guy is fucked up, and he's like covering up all this stuff, and we need to get him. Like there's like a lot of every single character, even side characters, has like a vengeance arc almost, and that just isn't my personal jam. And that's probably why it's not rubbing off on me. But it's not like it's a fundamental issue with it. It's just like it's the theme they went for isn't the theme that's perfect for me personally. So yeah, I can see it being like a not perfect game on Metacritic, but should it get a 93 to 95? Absolutely. Like it's fucking amazing. And I haven't even finished it yet. Like I don't even know if I'll finish it this weekend. I'm planning to play it the rest of today and the rest of tomorrow, and I don't know if I'll finish this game. It'll probably be still the rest of that week, this coming week, before I beat it. Because you know that if I get all the social links to max, because every time you max a social link, you unlock the final persona in their link to fuse. It's like Pokemon, but to unlock the final Pokemon of every type, let's just say, you have to max out the social link with that arcana. Each Pokemon's linked to an arcana in this case. So yeah, I've maxed almost every arcana, and that means if I max the last couple, I'll be able to fuse every Pokemon, let's just call them that, which means I'm gonna have to spend like 6 hours just fusing Pokemon, or in this case personas, to slowly fill out my compendium and finish that. So there's a lot left in this game. I'm 80 hours in. I'm probably gonna take another 20 to 30 hours to beat it. Like
jeez.
But no, I'm loving it. I'm having fun. It's not my favorite of the series, but it's probably the best of the series. And it's just great. Man. And that's it. That's what I've been up to.
Glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah. It's interesting as to how I'll feel about this in Game of the Year times. Because again, like the theme of this game doesn't resonate with me as much as Persona 4. Even though it's a really fantastic game, it's currently at the top of my Game of the Year list, just above Horizon Zero Dawn, but it's only just above Horizon Zero Dawn. Like, I loved Horizon Zero Dawn. That game was incredible, and it had a lot of, didn't have many memorable characters, but had a lot of memorable moments. This game has similar, but just because of theme, I might not love this much as, I don't know, like, it could be that Red Dead is my Game of the Year this year. It might be that fucking Prey is my game of the year this year. Yeah, like we'll see. Like this, it's not, the fight isn't over yet. All I know is it's definitely not Zelda. It could be Nier. I'm going to be playing Nier next, which you'll find out more, people at home, in the segment after the break. But
you can fight your CEO.
CEO? What? What are you talking about?
They have
about?
The CEO DLC.
Oh right.
They have like do you not know about the CEO DLC?
Yeah,
it looks
about
really
this, yeah.
Great.
That's really funny.
The gameplay looks awesome.
Like, not kidding, Nier gameplay is fantastic. Yeah, it's just, it's top tier. It's platinum.
I'll pick up Nier when it goes on sale, for sure.
It's Animu, man. It's perfect Animu.
It's Animu. Animu pussy.
Indeed. It's everything you'd ever want, noob. But it's a game where you have to play multiple times. It's like a 30-hour game. That's why I kind of am leaving it till after this. So yeah. I'm going to finish this. They're going to play Nier. And then I'm going to finish Zelda. That's my current thing. And that'll probably take me until E3. That's probably the next 3 months spoken for.
What about Prey?
Oh, shit. I'm betting Prey's like 10 hours. I'll probably squeeze it between Nier and Zelda. Zelda's
or
very
you
low
never...
priority right now. Sorry?
Really need to finish Zelda. You don't really need to finish Zelda.
I need to finish Zelda. I need to finish Zelda. For Game of the Year.
Do you?
I need to finish Zelda. It's gonna be. It's gonna come
just
out.
Just so
the
you
game
can say
year.
That it's not your game of the year.
Absolutely, I need to be able to say exactly why I think that game is flawed. And it's
okay.
Not even that it's
well,
a
I'll
bad game. It's
I'll
certainly not a bad game.
All I want is Ghost Recon to be higher than Zelda.
That
just
is
as a big
absolutely
fuck you.
Not happening. Like, I'm just gonna tell you now. After discussing this with Squiddle and Durin, they already know that it's gonna be their push for game of the year. It's going to be us versus those two.
I'm not going to let that happen. I'm not letting that happen.
It's going to come down to Thurbleton, you know. It's going to come down to Thurbs and where he lands on our arguments for each game. Because it's going to be 2v2. and by 2v2 I mean two people for Zelda and two people actually against Zelda. We won't be unifying against anything, because I don't think I like the same game you like. Unless Prey is
becomes the best game. Yes.
This is like Deus Ex like again somehow. Yeah. Right. Anyway. And with that, guys, this episode, we didn't talk about the intro, but this episode's a short episode. However, Durbleton recorded a one-shot kind of solo segment that would be appending to the end of the show. So this is the last you'll hear from me and Noob for this episode. Noobarama, do you have any plugs before you close out?
Well, I'm going to plug Minecraft for the Nintendo Switch.
I'm going to write that down and take that seriously.
Coming out in 2 weeks.
Plugs. Nintendo Switch. Minecraft.
Oh, this is what a fucking flawed console.
Oh my god.
This is like the biggest Nintendo Switch release in the month of May, literally. Switch release in the month of May.
Oh, May, right. You're actually probably right. Yeah. You're probably right. Fuck me. I don't regret buying it. It's a good system. I like the console. It just has no games. It's like the Vive. It's like going, "Oh, the Vive is a great thing." It's great, like VR works, but it's got no games that I really want to play.
I mean, VR doesn't really work.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And this thing doesn't have any battle life either, so everything's flawed in the end. For me, I'm going to plug another week running Giant Bomb Premium Membership, not because they're on sale, but This Is The Run is a series where Vinny Caravella, the man, the myth, the legend, the person we love most in the Giant Bomb crew, is up against the reigning champion of Soul Calibur 1, 8-on-8 random team battle, best of 3. And we're talking about like each match is 10 minutes long and it's a best of 3. Vinny is the up-and-coming challenger. He versus Dan. Episode 10 just came out. I'm not going to tell you how that finishes. That series is fantastic because it's watching Vinny as a normal, sane person versus Dan, who is an absolute crazy person. And you see a sane person slowly overcoming a crazy person in Soul Calibur, which is, I still think, one of the greatest fighting games ever made. It is fantastic. Like, just, it's something inherently watchable about fighting games because it's literally just, you can tell what's happening. Like, every moment you know exactly what's happening. And watching two, like, let's just be serious here, absolutely terrible fighting game players playing fighting games either makes you really, really angry or just, like, totally root for the one who becomes your favorite. And in this case, obviously, it's going to be Vinny because it's Vinny. And so you watch Vinny slowly get better and better and better at Soul Calibur, and Dan slowly realized that he only thought he was good at Soul Calibur, and it turned out he'd never actually fought anyone who's actually good at Soul Calibur. That's why he was undefeated. So
right, wow.
Because the backstory is Dan was bragging about how he played Soul Calibur 1 for like 2 years straight, and he was only beaten once ever in 8-on-8 random team battle online or whatever, just like whatever method they used to do multiplayer. But he was only ever beaten once. His first statement was he's never beaten, and then someone wrote in and said, no, you're wrong, I beat you once. And he's like, oh yeah, that one time. So Dan thought he was an undefeated champion of Soul Calibur 1 8-on-8 random team battle. And Vinny is on a quest to prove him wrong. And that is a really fun thing to watch. So I won't tell you how episode 10 goes. It is worth staying till episode 10. They're about 20 to 40 minutes each episode. But it's so good. It's so good if you're into watching fighting games and don't get angry when people are bad at fighting games. So with that, thank you for listening to this half of the show. Durbleton's coming out next after the break. And then we'll see you in 2 weeks coming, where hopefully there's more news and I would have finished Persona. And we would play Prey.
We'll wrap up the Minecraft release on Switch. Pardon?
Actually, do you think we could both beat Prey by next episode?
Depends how long it is. If it's 10 hours, for
if
sure.
Let's just say it's 20 hours long, which is my guess, because
yeah, I can play it in 2 weekends or whatever.
Yeah, I think we can beat Prey. Like,
let's aim for it. Let's aim for beating, if not at least getting a sizable chunk that we can devote solid discussion on.
So what we're gonna do is we're going to definitely try to, at the end of next Fortnite's episode, so in 2 weeks from now, we're going to finish talking about Prey. We're going to do possibly a Prey spoiler. We'll definitely do a Prey spoiler cast. Okay, wait. All right. Let's rewind further. First, assuming Prey is good. Okay?
Yes.
It has to get a good Metacritic score for me to buy it.
I'm not going to buy it if it's bad. Yes.
Yeah. If it's
I think it'll be longer than 20 hours because it's an $80 single player game.
I don't know. Like Dishonored was only 24 hours or whatever. 22 hours.
How long was Doom?
Doom was only 10 or 15.
Oh, fuck. Well, Doom had multiplayer, to be fair.
Yeah, Doom was just a tight experience. It was good that it was that short. Like, it shouldn't have been longer. Assuming Prey is not bad, therefore we both play it, and I would have finished Persona by then, and I may as well play Prey before Nier. Like, I'm already late on Nier, so there's no reason for me not push it longer. We're going to do a Prey spoiler cast, and then we're going to do a Persona 5 spoiler cast at the end of the next episode. So,
boom!
Look forward to that. See you in 2 weeks.
Look forward to Game of the Year.
Oh my god. It could be.
Game of the Year Minecraft for Nintendo Switch.
Isn't Mio the pre-release stuff for Prey like really good? Like people really seem to be liking
it. It looks really good. I'm really excited. Yeah. I'm actually quite excited.
So let's look forward to that.
I'm not that excited, but I'm pretty.
It looks a little bit like Dishonored. So in terms of art style, sorry. I burped there. I think it looks way nicer than I thought it would, but not like what I thought it would. I thought it would look like a shooter. It looks like an RPG. That's the strange thing about Prey. Anyway, so thank you for listening for this week's episode of the Scotchcast. Stick around for Thurbleton's segment where he solo talks about various things, including, I believe, Nier Automata. And we'll see you in a fortnight. Bye.
Hello, and welcome to a solo addendum add-on to the Scotchcast. We did a little bit of planning with just schedules and what would work out, and I did have some things I wanted to say this week, but work and time zones, as usual, got in the way from me joining in with Cynic and Dern and Squiddle to talk about something. The plan is, I believe, this is going to get added on to your regularly scheduled bi-weekly podcast that Cynic and whomever else recorded. We're really good at this. But, I've been playing a little bit of Nier. I haven't finished it, and I've been told that I actually need to finish it 3 times. So, but I've also got an advice from old co-host Shinboy to just mainline, like just do the main story. So anybody listening who's also playing Nier Automata on their first playthrough, like there are a lot of mechanics in place that not even mechanics, but just different barriers to getting to the fun parts of the game, and the fun parts are definitely fun. Just try and like stick through that. Apparently, don't do the side quest right away. Wait until the second playthrough, maybe. I'm not quite sure, but there's something to be said about that game. But I'll wait until I've at least got a couple playthroughs in to talk fully about it. Very neat game, a lot of neat elements with it. But the main thing I want to talk about was I've been playing an older iOS game called 80 Days by, I believe, Inkle. Inkle Studios. It's a game that came out in October of last year, and it's really good. It's a really good game. It is one of those games that, like, oh, you only have to pay $5. There's no ads that come up. It's not a free game. But it's the premise is based off of the Jules Verne novel of the same title, where you have to manservant Paspero, who has to assist his gentleman from England named Monsieur Fogg, or Phileas Fogg, I think, is for his wager to cross the world in 80 days. And the game plays around, just I'll jump into mechanics and then go through the other parts of why I think it's a really good game. But it's really just two different elements back and forth. And that's just like the world map, which you're discovering routes through various interactions in the game, and then choosing those same routes to take. But it's just like from city to city to city. And every time you reach a new area, you have to sort of figure out, where do I want to go next? Is that route available to me? And then also just like, how do I make the most for what money I have saved up versus the income I need to sort of like, if I run out of money, I need to get more money to pay for hotel lodging, transport, all that sort of stuff. But then also time. Like I'm on day 25 or something and I'm somewhere in Asia with this game. I've been playing it for 2 hours, maybe 2-3 hours through like several different sittings. And before I get into the game time sort of it, the other side of the game is when you are actually at a city and just like and in transport to other places. Having conversations, exploring the cities, that's where the game really shines with the writing of it. That's, I think, maybe its strongest suit. Obviously, they're pulling from a well-known author, Jules Verne, but even then, like the novel is just a single route, and the writers and the makers of the game, Inkle, had to sort of just figure out thousands of different options that would work. Because, you know, like, oh, what if you went, you know, up along the Scandinavian border, then cut straight south along Africa, and it, like, it's, you could go whatever route that is possible, and then you need to have dialogue choices for that. And so that is the neat thing. And then it seems like every interaction I've gone through there has been really well written. So when I've been playing this, it's often been at break at work, or when I have a little bit of free time, like while waiting for friends to leave, or like we're going on to see a movie or something. Like when I have like those 5-10 minutes of free time, that often is when iOS games tend to become the thing you'd want to play. And I've played other iOS games before. I've talked about on past episodes of like the games like One More Line, or just like the little arcade games. The Frogger, or the Frogger game that was a big hit a couple of years, like last year. But those are fun, but that goes into the roguelike sort of genre, in that like you're really just playing until you die. And that like 1 5-minute increment is the game. And then you're just going to do a new game, like just put a new quarter sort of thing and then give another try. And then there's like the puzzle games that are, oh, you'll work on one puzzle for a day or two, or like one sitting or maybe two sittings, then work on the next puzzle. And those are fun as well. This is sort of tries to tackle a grand thing. Like this one playthrough will probably take me a couple good weeks, or like several hours of in one sitting to sort of play. And that's fun, but that is a good time. The nice part is, I don't have to like stress about the whole journey. I just have to stress about what is my next like move in this chess piece, as it were, in this chess game of, oh, I've just made it to Alexandria on the shores of Egypt. Do I want to head down to Cairo? Do I want to try and cut what easterly? Like, what do I want my next move to be? And then also you can go to the market in a local city and see like, oh, what's available for sale, and that will help influence where you'd want to sort of direct the next leg in your journey. I mean, like, the end of the journey is obviously make it back to England, so you've completed your 80 days. But if the guy is selling something that, like, oh, this thing's worth 7,000 pounds in Hail, first question is, where the crap is Hail? So you tab out of the game, look it up on, like, Google, and you get an understanding of just where these neat cities are in the world, which is another neat, like, benefit just for real life. But then it's the thing of, like, oh, well, I can buy this thing for 100 pounds in this place and then sell it for, like, 10 times the profit somewhere else. That's on the way. And so you go on these little, like, side trips. It's sort of like, oh, this will be worth the time, and then I can use all this extra money to fund the next, like, trip. And that is a neat factor of, like, so balancing time versus money versus, like, how can you make money? Because if you don't want to buy stuff with the market, and if you just run out of money, you can also ask Monsieur Fogg, the person who you're butlering for, to take money out of the bank. But that also takes time. Like, the bank's not going to, like, is going to give you credit, but only after a couple of days. And then I guess the third big thing about this game is like the world building, like, thanks in no small part to Jules Verne, but the writing gives a way of having a world feeling lived in. It takes place, I want to say, after, like, post World War One, not yet World War Two, or maybe even pre World War One. Like, it's that timeline before or after World War One, and you think about, like, that's. Like, Zeppelins were a big thing, and like, cars were just getting off, like, the automobile. But Jules Verne, being what he is, like, there's Captain Nemo is just chilling somewhere in the ocean, and he might just show up in your game. But then also there's like a whole, like, Wizards Guild, I guess, of artificers. This playing this game has made me want to read some Jules Verne novels, I guess, which isn't a bad thing. But yeah, there's a real sense of a world existing beyond the point in which you are. And it's not just going from city to city, the dialogue interactions. And, like, you're want to go out and have those conversations, because the reward from that is often either A, learning about capitalist opportunities, we'll say, of, like, oh, hey, yeah, this place is really good for selling this thing that you might have, or you can get in this city and then sell it for the city, or you just learn about new paths, or even better is the guy you're talking, like, you go to a cafe, you sit down, you start talking to a guy, and then he's like, oh yeah, I'm an airship captain, and, like, yeah, I'm about to leave tomorrow, do you want to go on this, like, trip for me? And, like, oh, cool. And then you get that opportunity because you went out and explored. And I don't even know if I'm going to, like, finish my 80-day journey, but every time I've sat down and played it, it's been a nice, enjoyable experience. Just, like, getting a little bit more of the world, and the writing, like, just reading good writing is a nice thing. When I see everyone else just playing three-star matchup games or Pokemon, 80 days is pretty good. And yeah, it's $5, but come on, it's $5. Fairly certain it's available on iOS as well. Or not iOS. Well, it is available on iOS. Fairly certain it's available on Android as well. But yeah. So That's the main thing I want to talk about. I'm pretty sure by now Cynic stopped listening. So there's been one other game I've been playing. I've been sticking some time in Nier. I've done at least like six or seven sittings. And yeah, Shinboy gave me the recommendation to keep working on that. I've also been playing some Guild Wars 2. And if you want, it's the end of the podcast. People have probably already turned this off. For those of you listening who are still fans of the game, I guess we'll have a little mini Lincoln Cast episode here. But I've been playing Guild Wars 2 again, and it's the game's okay. The game's alright. It's worth going back to, I guess. Just to see what's new. And I'm actually going to talk about, I haven't done a lot of the Living World Season 2. I'm aware it's a thing, but it's sort of like I'm just getting my sea legs, I guess, getting my land legs, getting used to the game again. I have a couple characters that I was getting set up for the new masteries and getting good builds, and figured I'd try out how tough it is to get a new legendary. Because why not? That last one was a several-month nightmarish thing I'd prefer to forget. But the new one seems a lot easier, at least a lot less mountain climbing and more just lots of hills, lot of easy to moderate challenges, and those challenges seem to reward just playing 5 to 10 minutes a day, just to like check up on stuff. The first leg of it is just do a bunch of events in the world or do some fractals, and you can do all those fractals in like the easy tier. You don't have to do like the high end. It like doesn't say kill this boss while also at fractal level 70, where the slightest misstep will kill you. Just do the easy level and you're good. The next step, phase two, I guess, of getting a legendary is you have to do a lot of World v. World, which I haven't jumped into, which is actually a big surprise for me. At least the servers I'm on, it seems pretty quiet. I haven't checked on reset days, though, so I imagine it's still busy then. But it also has you do some PvP, and that's the main thing I want to talk about with this revisit to Guild Wars. I need to sort of catch up with some experts on this, but they've changed around some of the parts of PvP just with the way that it's structured. But before, when you would get in, you'd have a completely separate gear and like skill set and all that, and your character's bumped up to 80. They still do most of those things, but it's sort of like they've gotten rid of the things that were inconvenient. So your character can have your PvE gear, and I think it just automatically scales it, like changes the scaling ratio on it. So yeah, you don't have to have like a whole second set of gear and a whole second wardrobe and all that. And it does give you a second skill bar, but it's much easier to manage. The thing I've seen them also do, though, is they've introduced a neat, there's a new currency they haven't fully figured out, but it's backed by this little progress bar sort of thing that as you, there's kind of, I guess, experience levels, not in the same way of like you level up with PvP, but there is an experience bar that when it reaches full, like as it progresses, you get rewards. So it's kind of a mix between the daily achievement system, which is still going on, because I'll log in, do a couple dailies, get a little like karma experience thing and all that. But then also doing those dailies will progress me in this bar of getting rewards in the little PvP bracket. And you can choose between getting like, they actually have all of the PvE dungeons as reward options. So you get little chests that you would be getting from doing Citadel of Flame or something, which is weird. But then also just like, oh, hey, here's more PvP rewards. Here's more currency that you can use to buy stuff. So that is neat. And then the other thing, so that's the carrot on the stick part of PvP. The actual meat and potatoes of PvP is still kind of the same. It is nice to see that they've changed around the at least the unranked matchmaking system, so that like there's a lot more, you can vote for whatever map you want to do. It's not just on an endless cycle of random. They've also added, I want to say two, maybe three maps that are in like the beta stages. Like they're clearly marked as like, hey, this is a still in development test map. But if you want, you can just start playing it now. I assume it's not going to be it's not an option in the ranked modes, but in the unranked, it's like, yeah, just play it. We need testing. And I've been enjoying playing this, even though I'm sure if Cynic ever hears this, he would just tell me all the reasons why it's bad. I enjoy it because Overwatch has gotten kind of stale with the same game mode they have of either a single control point or like move a payload or something. And going back to a 3-point control game type in like a, granted it's 5v5 versus 6v6, but that's close enough in balancing. But a 3-point control with like a other thing, depending on the map of like, oh, you can get cannons to shoot at your enemies or killing a dangerous NPC will grant your team a boon, a reward. Like that kind of like side thing for every map is neat. But the 3-point control thing is fun in that when I'm doing a pub game, be it in Overwatch or Guild Wars 2's like PvP, it's very often just like I'm by myself against with a bunch of randos fighting other randos. So there is definitely a lack of teamwork, we'll say, communication. It's nice with the 3-point control mode of Guild Wars that like even when I'm facing people of whose skill is better than mine, which sometimes there's some really fun 1v1 fights and like that is an enjoyable experience, or I'm just like doing the most damage and I'm wrecking house, or I'm getting wrecked. Like it's all those things have happened since I started playing Guild Wars 2 again. Beyond my skill at pushing buttons, there's also the skill in my head of just like knowing, oh, we got three people at this point. I can do a back cap on the enemy's like the point that's closer to their side, or I can go like defend ours to sort of cut them off and just buy time before they finally take it, depriving them of points on the map board that they would get had they taken that control point. Because as you get the control point, it ticks down and gives you closer to victory. So just being able to delay or to like, you know, help secure a game beyond just my skill at pushing buttons, that has been an enjoyable experience that I've sort of been missing out in Overwatch, because Overwatch is pretty much just, can you shoot the mans with your gun? No? Well, then stand on the control point, I guess, and also wait for a respawn. Yeah, I mean, like, Overwatch is still a good game, and they're doing a lot of neat things that I wish were more permanent with their updates. I've been playing a lot of the new update with it's another horde mode, just like Halloween, but it's fun, and people are having a good time with it, and Blizzard's going to get rid of it. Because, I don't know. But yeah, that game is starting to get stale, and even though it's got like a nice community as well as the normally toxic community, Overwatch, it's nice to play something else that is fun. So yeah, Guild Wars 2, it's a free game. It's cheaper than 80 days. There you go. Trying to think anything else that I've been up to that would be of good podcast interest. But it's pretty much it. My segments usually don't run that long. But yeah, I guess that will do it for this week's episode of the Scotch Lincoln Cast. You can always find us at the Lincoln Cast. I think we're at the Scotch Cast game. Feel free to find us at scotchcast.cool. We've got that down on lock. Working on the rest. But, yeah, link for me, or my plug for me, will probably be there's a YouTube video that would be a good news topic, but really just it's just worth watching or listening to. You don't have to watch these days. But John Bain, also known as Total Biscuit, has a a vlog, I guess. It's a vlog where he talks about how he and a bunch of other internet entertainer influencers, personalities were brought on. I believe Jim Sterling, Jimquisition. They a bunch of people were brought to Valve to talk about the Steam front page, and the video speaks for itself. It's worth watching, and just the Steam front page of the store is an important thing, and it's nice to know that they may not be doing something right away with it, but Valve is aware that it needs adjustment still, and like the Steam Greenlight and all that stuff. I guess a little bit of a news topic. They a couple weeks ago announced that they were getting rid of Steam Greenlight and instead bringing some sort of just initial cost, be it $500 or $1,000 or something, to become a publisher on there. Has good merits and has bad merits to it. But if they were to do that, they'd also need to find some way to make it so that the Steam front page works. So, yeah, look for that in the link description, or just look up, Total Biscuits visiting Valve. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Scotchcast. Bye.